ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome back to the live studios in Govardhan, ISKCON Bhaktivedanta Ashram, where we are continuing with our pratha, which we have done for 16 straight years. This makes 17. Magic number.
Haribo! Try.
And if anybody thinks these books don't work, you've got another thing coming. Okay. Carrying on from the second chapter, the beginning of the second chapter of the fifth canto, the activities of Maharaj Avnidra. In case you didn't know, we're planning to do the fifth, sixth, and seventh cantos in 1 month, and we have a sage over here that's putting forward the idea that we may be able to do one or two more cantos. We put him on hold. We put him on hold, you know, thought maybe we better just stick what we can do.
Of course, we'll never do it if we have long introductions.
Hey, listen. Listen, last year, Vaisheshika Prabhu and I, we thought, genuinely, if we could get through the whole third canto, which is a long canto, we would be doing good. And we got through the whole third and fourth canto. Brahma just opened it up.
We got the same thing we're doing today.
Your voice, your voice is low, supposedly.
My voice is low. Maybe that's because I don't have a thing on. I do. My voice is low, according to whom?
Manish Singh.
Wow, man, he's Manish Singh. Oh, Manish, I'll sing a little louder then.
Is your transmitter on?
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead, Marsh.
Chapter 2. The Activities of Maharaj Avnidra. Text 1. Shishupadev Goswami continued. After his father, Maharaj Priyavrata, departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing austerities, King Avnidra completely obeyed his order.
What chapter summary? We're just asking for the chapter summary.
Strictly observing the principles of religion, he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudvipa as if they were his own begotten sons. Purport. Following the instruction of his father, Maharaj Priyavrata, Maharaj Avnidra ruled the inhabitants of Jambudvipa according to religious principles. These principles are exactly contrary to the modern principles of faithlessness. As clearly stated here, the king protected the citizens the way a father protects his begotten children. How he ruled the citizens is also described here, dharma vekshamana, strictly according to religious principles. It is the duty of the executive head of the state to see that the citizens strictly follow religious principles. The Vedic religious principles begin with varnashrama dharma, the duties of the four varnas and four ashramas. Dharma refers to principles given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first principle of dharma, or religion, is to observe the duties of the four orders as enjoined by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to people's qualities and activities, society should be divided into brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, and then again into brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. These are religious principles, and it is the duty of the head of state to see that his citizens strictly follow them. He should not merely act officially. He should be like a father who is always a well-wisher of his sons. Such a father strictly observes whether his sons are performing their duties, and sometimes he also punishes them. Just contrary to the principles mentioned here, the presidents and chief executives in the age of Kali are simply tax collectors. who do not care whether religious principles are observed. Indeed, the chief executives of the present day introduce all kinds of sinful activity, especially illicit sex, intoxication, animal killing, and gambling. These sinful activities are now very prominently manifested in India. Although 100 years ago, these four principles of sinful life were strictly prohibited in the families of India, they have now been introduced into every Indian family. Therefore, they cannot follow religious principles. In contrast to the principles of the kings of old, the modern state is concerned only with propaganda for levying taxes and is no longer responsible for the spiritual welfare of the citizens. The state is now callous to religious principles. Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that in Kali Yuga, the government will be entrusted with Dasyu Dharma, which means the occupational duty of rogues and thieves. Modern heads of state are rogues and thieves who plunder the citizens instead of giving them protection. Rogues and thieves plunder without regard for law. But in this age of Kali, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the lawmakers themselves plunder the citizens. The next prediction to be fulfilled, which is already coming to pass, is that because of the sinful activities of the citizens and the government, rain will become increasingly scarce. Gradually, there will be complete drought and no production of food grains. People will be reduced to eating flesh and seeds, and many good, spiritually inclined people will have to forsake their homes because they will be too harassed by drought, taxation, and famine. The Krishna consciousness movement is the only hope to save the world from such devastation. It is the most scientific and authorized movement for the actual welfare of the whole human society. Text 2. Desiring to get a perfect son and to become an inhabitant of Pitriloka, Maharaj Adnidra once worshipped Lord Brahma, the master of those in charge of material creation. He went to a valley of Mandara Hill where the damsels of the heavenly planets come down to stroll. There he collected garden flowers and other necessary paraphernalia and then engaged in severe austerities and worship. Purport. The king became Pitriloka Kama, or desirous of becoming transferred to the planet named Pitriloka, planet of the trees. Pitriloka is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrta Devan Pitrin Yanti Prati Vrta. To go to this planet, one needs very good sons who can make offerings to Lord Vishnu and then offer the remnants to their forefathers. The purpose of the Shraddha ceremony is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, so that after pleasing him, one may offer prasad to one's forefathers and in this way make them happy. The inhabitants of Pitriloka are generally men of the karmakandiya or fruitive activities category who have been transferred there because of their pious activities. They can stay there as long as their descendants offer them Vishnu prasad. Everyone in heavenly planets such as Pitriloka, however, must return to earth after exhausting the effects of his pious acts. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Chine Punye Martyalokam Vishanti, persons who perform pious acts are transferred to higher planets, but when the effects of their pious acts are over, they are again transferred to earth. Since Maharaj Priyavrata was a great devotee, how could he have begotten a son who desired to be transferred to Pitriloka? Lord Krishna says, Pitri Nyanti Priti Vrataha. Persons who desire to go to Pitriloka are transferred there. Similarly, Yanti Mad Yajino Pimam. Persons who desire to be transferred to the spiritual planets, Vaikuntha Lokas, can also go there. Since Maharaj Adnidra was the son of a Vaishnava, he should have desired to be transferred to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha-loka. Why then did he desire to be transferred to Pitriloka? In answer to this, Goswami Giridhara, one of the Bhagavatam commentators, remarks that Adnidra was born when Maharaj Priyavrata was infatuated by lusty desires. This may be accepted as a fact because sons are begotten with different mentalities according to the time of their conception. According to the Vedic system, therefore, before a child is conceived, the Garbhadana Sanskara is performed. This ceremony molds the mentality of the father in such a way that when he plants his seed in the womb of his wife, he will begin a child whose mind will be completely saturated with a devotional attitude. At the present moment, however, there are no such Garbhadana Sanskaras, and therefore people generally have a lusty attitude when they beget children. Especially in this age of Kali, there are no Garbhadana ceremonies. Everyone enjoys sex with his wife like a cat or dog. Therefore, according to Shastric injunctions, almost all the people of this age belong to the Shudra category. Of course, although Maharaj Agnitra had a desire to be transferred to Pitriloka, this does not mean that his mentality was that of a Shudra. He was a Kshatriya. Maharaj Agnitra desired to be transferred to Pitriloka, and therefore he needed a wife, because anyone desiring to be transferred to Pitriloka must leave behind a good son to offer yearly pinda or prasad from Lord Vishnu. To have a good son, wanted a wife from a family of demigods. Therefore he went to Mandara Hill, where the women of the demigods generally come, to worship Lord Brahma. In Bhagavad Gita 4.12 it is said, Kangshanta Kamanam Siddhim Yajanta Iyadevataha. Materialists who want quick results in the material world worship demigods. Worship who?
Demigods.
Oh, all right. This is also confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Aishwarya Prajip Sabaha. Those who desire beautiful wives, substantial wealth, and many sons worship the demigods. But an intelligent devotee, instead of being entangled by the happiness of this material world in the form of a beautiful wife, material opulence, and children, desires to be immediately transferred back home, back to Godhead. Thus, he worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Text 3. Understanding King Agnidra's desire, the first and most powerful created being of this universe, Lord Brahma, selected the best of the dancing girls in his assembly, whose name was Purvachiti, and sent her to the king. Purport. In this verse, the words Bhagavan Adi Purusha are significant. Bhagavan Adi Purusha is Lord Krishna. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lord Krishna is the original person. In Bhagavad Gita, he is also addressed by Arjuna as Purusham Adyam, the original person. And he is called Bhagavan. In this verse, however, we see that Lord Brahma is described as Bhagavan Adi Purusha. The reason he is called Bhagavan is that he fully represents the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is the firstborn creature in this universe. Lord Brahma could understand Maharaj Agnidra's desire because he is as powerful as Lord Vishnu. As Lord Vishnu, situated as Paramatma, can understand the desire of the living entity, so Lord Brahma can also understand the living entity's desire for Vishnu as a via medium informs him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tenhe Brahma Dina Ya Adi Kabaye,
Lord Vishnu informs Lord Brahma of everything from within his heart. From where?
Within his heart.
Oh, all right. Just checking. Just checking. Because Maharaj Agnitra specifically worshipped Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma was pleased, and he sent Purvachiti, the Apsara, to satisfy him.
Two short questions here. It says that Brahma is as powerful as Lord Vishnu. Can you...
It says elsewhere that it's by the mercy of Lord Vishnu that Brahma is almost as powerful as Vishnu. Because he has to do this huge task of creating the universe. So Krishna can empower somebody like that.
Okay. And the previous one, it says that time of conception, does not just mean time, but generally means consciousness of the parent, you know.
That's what it means, the time at the time of conception, the consciousness has to be pure, proper.
Although time does also play into the equation, time, place, circumstance, consciousness, all the different factors. So the time includes all those different...
Yeah, like the story of Dithi.
Yeah.
Because it was a long time when Shiva was marching across the sky with his wheels and goes.
Not a good time.
Not very good.
Of course, you could look at it in another way, that time could be the time at the time of Garbhadhana Samskara. Eh? Eh? Text 4. The plot is thickening here. The Apsara, sent by Lord Brahma, began strolling in a beautiful park near the place where the king was meditating and worshipping. The park was beautiful because of its dense green foliage and golden creepers. There were pairs of varied birds such as peacocks in a lake there were ducks and swans, all vibrating very sweet sounds. Thus the park was magnificently beautiful because of the foliage, the clear water, the lotus flowers, and the sweet singing of various kinds of birds. Text 5. As Purvachiti passed by on the road in a very beautiful style and mood of her own, the pleasing ornaments on her ankles tinkled with her every step. Although Prince Agnitra was controlling his senses, practicing yoga with half-open eyes, he could see her with his lotus-like eyes. And when he heard the sweet tinkling of her bangles, he opened his eyes slightly more and could see that she was just nearby. Purport. It is said that yogis always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within their hearts. Dhyana vastita tad katena manasap pashanti yam yoginaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always observed by yogis who practice controlling the venomous senses. What senses?
Venomous.
Just checking. As recommended in Bhagavad Gita, yogis should practice samprekshya nasikagram, keeping their eyes half open. If the eyes are closed completely, there will be a tendency to sleep. So-called yogis sometimes practice a fashionable form of yoga by closing their eyes and meditating, but we have actually seen such so-called yogis sleeping and snoring while meditating. Prabhupada once imitated their snoring in a lecture. This is not the practice of yoga. To actually practice yoga, one should keep his eyes half open and gaze at the tip of his nose. Although Agnitra, the son of Priyavrata, was practicing mystic yoga and trying to control his senses, the tinkling sound of Purvachiti's ankle bells disturbed his practice. Yogi Indriya Samyamya, actual yoga practice, means controlling the senses. One must practice mystic yoga to control the senses, but the sense control of a devotee who fully engages in the service of the Lord with his purified senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam can never be disturbed. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati therefore stated, Durmatin Driya Kala Sarpa Patali Prokthata Sangstra Yate. The practice of yoga is undoubtedly good because it controls the senses, which are like venomous serpents. When one engages in devotional service, however, completely employing all the activities of the senses in the service of the Lord, the venomous quality of the senses is completely nullified. It is explained that a serpent is to be feared because of its poisoned fangs. But if those fangs are broken, the serpent, although it seems fearsome, is not at all dangerous. Devotees, therefore, may see hundreds and thousands of beautiful women with fascinating bodily movements and gestures, but not be allured. Whereas such women would make ordinary yogis fall. Even the advanced yogi, Vishwamrita, broke his mystic practice but to unite with Menaka and beget a child known as Shakuntala. The practice of mystic yoga, therefore, is not sufficiently strong to control the senses. Another example is Prince Agnidra, whose attention was drawn to the movements of Purvajiti, the Apsara, simply because he heard the tinkling of her ankle bells. In the same way that Vishwamrita Muni was attracted by the tinkling bangles of Menaka, Prince Agnidra, upon hearing the tinkling bangles of Purvajiti, immediately opened his eyes to see her beautiful movements as she walked. The prince was also very handsome. As described herein, his eyes were just like the buds of lotus flowers. As he opened his lotus-like eyes, he could immediately see that the Apsara was present at his side.
Text number 6. Like a honeybee, the Apsara smelled the beautiful and attractive flowers. She could attract the minds and vision of both humans and demigods by her playful movements, her shyness and humility, her glances, the very pleasing sounds that poured from her mouth as she spoke, and the motion of her limbs. By all these qualities, she opened for Cupid, who bears an arrow of flowers, a path of oral reception into the minds of men. When she spoke, nectar seemed to flow from her mouth. As she breathed, the bees, mad for the taste of her breath, tried to hover about her beautiful lotus-like eyes. Disturbed by the bees, she tried to move hastily, but as she raised her feet to walk quickly, her hair, the belt on her hips, and her breasts, which were like water jugs, also moved in a way that made her extremely beautiful and attractive. Indeed, she seemed to be making a path for the entrance of Cupid, who is most powerful. Therefore, the prince, completely subdued by seeing her, spoke to her as follows. Purport: how a beautiful woman's movements and gestures, her hair and the structure of her breasts, hips, and other bodily features attract the minds not only of men but the demigods also, is very finely described in this statement. The words divija and manuja specifically emphasize that the attraction of feminine gestures is powerful everywhere within this material world, both on this planet and in the higher planetary systems. It is said that the standard of living in the higher planetary systems is thousands and thousands of times higher than the standard of living on this planet. Therefore, the beautiful bodily features of the women there are also thousands and thousands of times more attractive than the features of the women on Earth. The Creator has constructed women in such a way that their beautiful voices and movements and their beautiful features of their hips, their breasts, and the other parts of their bodies attract the members of the opposite sex, both on Earth and on other planets, and awaken their lusty desires. When one is controlled by Cupid or the beauty of women, he becomes stunned like matter, such as stone. Captivated by the material movements of women, he wants to remain in this material world. Thus, one's promotion to the spiritual world is checked simply by seeing the beautiful bodily structures and movements of women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore warned all devotees to beware of the attraction of beautiful women and materialistic civilization. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even refused to see Prataparudra Maharaj because he was a very opulent person in the material world. Lord Chaitanya said in this connection, Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanomukhasya, those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord because they are very serious about going back home, back to Godhead, should be very careful to avoid seeing the beautiful gestures of women and should also avoid seeing persons who are very rich. Skinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanomukhasya Param Param Jagamashur Pavasagarasya Sandarshanam Vishanayanam Ata Yoshitam Cha Ahanta Hanta Vishabhakshanato Pyasadhu. Alas, for a person who is seriously desiring to cross the material ocean and engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist engage in sense gratification or seeing a woman who is similarly interested is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. One who is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, should not contemplate the attractive features of women and the opulence of rich men. Such contemplation will check one's advancement in spiritual life. Once a devotee is fixed in Krishna consciousness, however, these attractions will not agitate his mind. 7. The prince mistakenly addressed the apsara, "O best of saintly persons, who are you? Why are you on this hill? And what do you want to do? Are you one of the illusory potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You seem to be carrying two bows without strings. What is the reason you carry these bows? Is it for some purpose of your own or for the sake of a friend? Perhaps you carry them to kill the mad animals in this forest." Purport. Well, undergoing severe penances in the forest, Agnidra was captivated by the movements of Purvachitti, the girl sent by Lord Brahma. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, kamaistasteritigyana, when one becomes lusty, he loses his intelligence. Therefore, Agnidra, having lost his intelligence, could not distinguish whether Purvachitti was male or female. He mistook her for a Muniputra, the son of a saintly person in the forest, and addressed her as Munivarya. Because of her personal beauty, however, he could not believe her to be a boy. He therefore began studying her features. First of all, her two eyebrows, which were so expressive that he wondered whether he or she might be the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words used in this connection are Bhagavat Pada Devataya. Devata, the demigods, all belong to this material world, whereas Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, is always beyond this material world and is therefore known as Paradevata. The material world is certainly created by Maya, but it is created under the direction of Paradevata, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mayadyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, Maya is not the ultimate authority for the creation of this material world. Maya acts on behalf of Krishna. Purvachitti's eyebrows were so beautiful that Agnidra compared them to bows without strings. He therefore asked her whether they were to be used for her own purposes or for the sake of someone else. Her eyebrows were like bows meant to kill animals in the forest. This material world is like a great forest, and its inhabitants are like forest animals such as deer and tigers meant to be killed. The killers are the eyebrows of beautiful women. Captivated by the beauty of the fair sex, all the men of the world are killed by bows without strings, but cannot see how they are killed by Maya. It is a fact, however, that they are being killed, bhutva bhutva praliyate. By dint of his tapasya, Agnidra could understand how Maya acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word pramatan is also significant. Pramata refers to one who cannot control his senses. The entire material world is being exploited by people who are pramata or vimudha. Prahlad Maharaj therefore said, Shocheta to vimukacheta sa indriyarta maya sukaya param udvahato vimudhan. They are rotting in material activities for transient material pleasure and spoiling their lives, toiling all day and night, simply for sense gratification with no attachment for love of Godhead. I'm simply lamenting for them and devising various plans to deliver them from the clutches of maya. Karmis who act very seriously for sense gratification are always referred to in the Shastras by such terms as pramata, vimukha, and vimudha. They are killed by maya. However, one who is a pramata, a sane, sober person, a dhira, knows very well that a human being's primary duty is to render service to the Supreme Person. Maya is always ready to kill those who are pramata with her invisible bows and arrows. Agnidra questioned Purvachiti about this. 8. Then Agnidra observed the glancing eyes of Purvachiti and said, "My dear friend, you have two very powerful arrows, namely your glancing eyes. Those arrows have feathers like the petals of a lotus flower. Although they have no shafts, they are very beautiful, and they have very sharp, piercing points. They appear very peaceful, and thus it seems that they will not be shot at anyone. You must be loitering in this forest to shoot those arrows at someone, but I cannot understand whom. My intelligence is dull, and I cannot combat you. Indeed, no one can equal you in prowess, and therefore I pray that your prowess will be for my good fortune." Purport. Agnidra thus began appreciating Purvachiti's powerful glance upon him. He compared her glancing eyes to very sharp arrows. Although her eyes were as beautiful as lotuses, they were simultaneously like shaftless arrows, and Agnidra was therefore afraid of them. He hoped that her glances upon him would be favorable because he was already captivated, and the more captivated he became, the more impossible it would be for him to remain without her. Agnidra therefore prayed to Purvachiti that her glances at him would be auspicious, not futile. In other words, he prayed that she would become his wife. Text 9. Seeing the bumblebees following Purvachiti, Maharaj Agnidra said, "My dear Lord, the bumblebees surrounding your body are like disciples surrounding your worshipable self. They are incessantly chanting the mantras of the Samaveda, and the Upanishads, thus offering prayers to you. Just as great sages resort to the branches of the Vedic literatures, the bumblebees are enjoying the showers of flowers falling from your hair." 10. O Brahmana, I can simply hear the tinkling of your ankle bells. Within those bells, titiri birds seem to be chirping among themselves. Although I do not see their forms, I can hear how they are chirping. When I look at your beautiful circular hips, I see there are the lovely color of kadamba flowers, and your waist is encircled by a belt of burning cinders. Indeed, you seem to have forgotten to dress yourself. Purport. With lusty desires to see Purvachiti, Agnidra especially gazed upon the girl's attractive hips and waist. When a man looks upon a woman with such lusty desires, he is captivated by her face, her breast, and her waist. For a woman first attracts a man to fulfill his sexual desires by the beautiful features of her face, by the beautiful slope of her breast, and also by her waist. Purvachiti was dressed in fine yellow silk, and therefore her hips looked like kadamba flowers. Because of her belt, her waist seemed to be encircled by burning cinders. She was fully dressed, but Agnidra had become so lusty that he asked, "Why have you come naked?" Text 11. Agnidra then praised Purvachiti's raised breasts. He said, "My dear Brahmana, your waist is very thin, yet with great difficulty you are carefully carrying two horns to which my eyes have become attracted. What is filling those two beautiful horns?
You seem to have spread fragrant red powder upon them, powder that is like the rising morning sun. O most fortunate one, I beg to inquire, where have you gotten this fragrant powder that is perfuming my ashram, my place of residence? Purport. Agnidra appreciated Purvachiti's raised breasts. After seeing the girl's breasts, he became almost mad. Sound familiar? Nevertheless, he could not recognize whether Purvachiti was a boy or a girl, for as a result of his austerity, he saw no distinction between the two. He therefore addressed her with the word Dvija, O Brahmana. Yet why should a Dvija, a Brahmana boy, have horns on his chest? Because the boy's waist was thin, Agnidra thought he was carrying the horns with great difficulty, and therefore they must be filled with something very valuable. Otherwise, why would he carry them? When a woman's waist is thin and her breasts are full, she looks very attractive. Agnidra, his eyes attracted, contemplated the heavy breasts of the girl's thin body and imagined how her back must sustain them. Agnidra imagined that her raised breasts were two horns she had covered with cloth so that others would not see the valuables within them. Agnidra, however, was very anxious to see them. Therefore, he requested, please uncover them so that I can see what you are carrying. Rest assured that I shall not take it away. If you feel an inconvenience in removing the covering, I can help you. I myself can uncover them to see what valuable things those raised horns contain. He was also surprised to see the red dust of perfumed kumkum spread over her breasts. Nevertheless, still considering Purvachiti a boy, Agnidra addressed her as Subhaga, most fortunate Muni. The boy must have been fortunate, otherwise, how simply by standing there could he perfume Agnidra's entire ashram? Text 12.
That's a really short, small question. Is there just as far as horns go, I don't know, what kind of horn are you talking about? Because when I think of a horn, I think of like an animal's horn. So you can't really fill it with...
He wasn't thinking.
No, but there are horns that contain things like that. That they have a wide opening. And thinking what kind of horn that is, center cross kind of horn.
I don't know how to name for it, but I know they exist. Like they're
like this
one of powder and stuff.
Yeah.
The rhino
they're
horn?
There.
Rhino horn?
No, the kind of horn you can blow.
Don't make me come over there.
Just call it blow horn.
They have the musket, they have the horn, and they put the gunpowder in it, and then they went. It wasn't my fault. Yeah. I didn't get into that.
That's right.
Text 12. Thank you. Oh, best friend, will you kindly show me the place where you reside? I cannot imagine how the residents of that place have gotten such wonderful bodily features as your raised breasts, which agitate the mind and eyes of a person like me who sees them. Judging by the sweet speech and kind smiles of those residents, I think that their mouths must contain nectar. Purport. Still bewildered, Agnidra wanted to see the place from which the Brahmana boy had come, where the men had such raised breasts. Such attractive features, he thought, must be due to the severe austerities performed there. Agnidra addressed the girl as Siritama, the best friend, so that she would not refuse to take him there. Not only was Agnidra captivated by the girl's raised breast, he was also attracted by her sweet speech. Nectar seemed to emanate from her mouth, and therefore he was increasingly surprised. Text 13. My dear friend, what do you eat to maintain your body? Because you are chewing betel, a pleasant scent is emanating from your mouth. This proves that you always eat the remnants of food offered to Vishnu. Indeed, you must also be an expansion of Lord Vishnu's body. Your face is as beautiful as a pleasing lake. Your jeweled earrings resemble two brilliant sharks with unblinking eyes like those of Vishnu, and your own eyes resemble two restless fish. Simultaneously, therefore, two sharks and two restless fish are swimming in the lake of your face. Besides them, the white rows of your teeth seem like rows of very beautiful swans in the water, and your scattered hair resembles swarms of bumblebees following the beauty of your face. Purport. The devotees of Lord Vishnu are also his expansions. They are called Vibhinaksha. Lord Vishnu has offered all kinds of sacrificial ingredients, and because devotees always eat prasad, they always eat what?
Prasad.
Just checking. The remnants of his food, the scent of sacrificial ingredients, emanates not only from Vishnu, but also from the devotees who eat the remnants of his food, or the food of his devotees. Agnidra considered Purvachiti an expansion of Lord Vishnu because of the pleasing scent of her body. Aside from that, because of her jeweled earrings shaped like sharks, because of her scattered hair resembling bumblebees mad after the scent of her body, and because of the white rows of her teeth which resemble swans, Agnidra compared Purvachiti's face to a beautiful lake decorated with lotus flowers, fish, swans, and bumblebees. Text 14. My mind is already restless. Mind is already what?
Restless.
And by playing with a ball, moving it all about with your lotus-like palm, you are also agitating my eyes. Your curling black hair is now scattered, but you are not attentive to arranging it. Are you not going to arrange it? Like a man attached to women, the most cunning wind is trying to take off your lower garment. Are you not mindful of it? Purport. The girl, Purvachiti, was playing with a ball in her hand, and the ball seemed like nothing but another lotus flower captured by her lotus-like palm. Because of her movements, her hair was loose, and the belt holding her cloth was giving way as if the cunning wind were trying to make her naked. Yet she paid no attention to arranging her hair or fixing her dress. As Agnidra tried to see the girl's naked beauty, his eyes were very agitated by her movements. Text 15. O best among those performing austerities, where did you get this beautiful, wonderful beauty that dismantles the austerities performed by others? I think I'll read that again. O best among those performing austerities, where did you get this wonderful beauty that dismantles the austerities performed by others? Where have you learned this art? What austerity have you undergone to achieve this beauty, my dear friend? I desire that you join me to perform austerity and penance, for it may be that the Creator of the universe, Lord Brahma, being pleased with me, has sent you to become my wife. Purport. Agnidra appreciated the wonderful beauty of Purvachiti. Indeed, he was surprised to see such exceptional beauty, which must have been the result of past austerities and penances. He therefore asked the girl whether she had achieved such beauty just to break the penances and austerities of others. He thought that Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, might have been pleased with him and might therefore have sent her to become his wife. He requested Purvachiti to become his wife so that together they could perform austerities and penances in family life. In other words, a suitable wife helps her husband perform penances and austerities in household life if both of them are on the same elevated platform of spiritual understanding. Without spiritual understanding, husband and wife cannot be equally situated. Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, is interested in good progeny. Therefore, unless he is pleased, one cannot get a suitable wife. In fact, Lord Brahma is worshipped in marriage ceremonies. In India, even today, wedding invitations are still issued with a picture of Lord Brahma on the face of the card.
In that sense, this morning's reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, ending on Canto 5, Chapter 2, The Activities of Maharaj Agnidra, will take up at
text number 16 at 3:30 p.m. India, Indian Standard Time. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for everybody in the studio, live studio audience. Gaur Premanande
Haribo,
Nitai Gaura
Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo.
Natari Armarman.